Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a team of voices down the tube, really random stuff with Miss Darko. I am your host, Sky. And the team of voices is a group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for keeping the site up and running, giving us a place to read and share our poetry. A special thanks to Deborah Lee for running the blog talk page and the group and giving us a place to share live. Tonight, we will be going over some really random stuff. I'm pretty excited. Before we get into that, I do want to say a little bit about our opening music, which we've been jamming out to. I know I have. It was Ace of Base. It is a Swedish pop group formed in 1990, just do this really quick, and originally consisting of siblings, Jonas, Lynn, and Jenny Berggren, with Us Exberg. And they achieved worldwide success following the release of their debut album, Happy Nation, in 1992, later reissued as The Sign. It was certified 9 times platinum in the United States and was the best-selling album of 1994. one of the most successful debut items of all time. It was the first to produce 3 number one singles on the Billboard mainstream top 40 chart, All That She Wants, The Signed, and Don't Turn Around, which I also really love. A little bit about The Sign was from the album, as I just said. Here we go. It was a story about a man and woman in a complicated relationship. Both of them wonder where their relationship is headed, and the man leaves for a while to ponder the problem. The answer to their problem is left to the listeners to decide on the ending. And a little bit about our closing song, because we will be closing with Ace of Base as well, but it's going to be the song Beautiful Life. And Ace of Base scored again with this up-tempo hit, which became an international success. It's a very upbeat song that has a gospel influence. The song had state power. It was the first to be played the night of the Florida Marlins won Game 7, the 1997 World Series, and it has been featured in motion pictures such as Night at the Roxbury and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. However, it was also the last original Ace of Base song to crack the top 40 in the United States. So I hope you guys enjoyed that little bit of information about our song list. And tonight, like I said, we're just talking about some really random stuff. I put up some prompts. There were dangerous water slides. There were the deepest points of the earth and the devil's kettle. You could go many different avenues. I always say you can have fiction, reality, tie them together, do whatever you want, have fun with them. I know I tied a lot of fiction into my reality. I think my piece is totally fiction and no reality at all, but that works out fine. I do already have some callers, which I'm really excited about, so let me say hello to them. Hello, Raconteur.
Good evening.
How are you?
Oh, not bad, not bad.
You brought me a little bit of devil's kettle, I see.
Well, it's kind of a story that's related. That one thought led to the other. Let's put it like that. It's more of an artifact than.
It's supposed to be going down the tube. So you had inspiration, and your mind went where it went. That's all that matters.
And no, it's normally not allowed out on it.
It's usually not what? Oh, allowed out?
My mind is normally not allowed out on its own, yeah, so.
Oh, well, here it's fine. I do also have got another 2, and I think a Kitty on the line. Hi, Kay and Steven.
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Victoria needs to talk to you.
Oh, I love when Victoria, you know, and I have, we all have conversations.
Yeah.
How y'all doing tonight?
Alrighty, how are you?
Good, I'm hanging out. And I'm hanging out.
Okay.
Oh, what's up with the 97 World Series?
The Indians lost.
Oh.
It was the Indians and the Marlins, and they lost.
And they lost.
Game 7.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm giving you flashbacks of terrible things. How long do I have everybody for? Time restraints? What are you guys doing?
30 seconds.
You'll be
I can hang.
2 a.m. All right, so you're hanging. Steven will be right at 2 a.m. I'm just kidding. I'm going to drop you actually rather soon. Yeah, 2 a.m. 2 a.m. Did you write about the deepest points? Yes, you did. I thought you might grab that one.
I had a pretty
so what did you think?
I didn't have time to write.
No, it's okay. It doesn't. Listen, pre-writes, new writes. If it applies to the prompt, then that's cool with me. And you're here.
Hey,
I hear some lovely voices. Yeah.
If I had
Steven's Steven's deep to begin with.
What were you saying? If you what?
I said time I would have probably went water slide because some of those water slides are pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
Did you watch the videos? What did you guys think? Oh my goodness.
Some of those look like they'd be fun. Others I would say no thank you.
No.
They were all like a pass
some
for me. They were like, no. I was wondering, I thought you might go deepest place in the ocean, but then I thought one of the slides have sharks. And you really like sharks. So I was torn.
Yeah. Some of those water slides look like you'd be pulling your swim trunks out of your mouth after you went on it.
You know what's funny? When you start listening, when you start to hear it only like lasts 5 seconds, but I bet those 5 seconds are really slow, especially the one when you lose contact with the tube and you just like fly and you've actually lost contact. Like that to me would seem like a long 5 seconds, even a long 1 second off the air when you're not clamped or held in by anything. I don't know about that.
I'm sorry. I play semantics with something like that. When you lose contact, it's not a slide anymore. Now it's a fall. And then I want a parachute. I'm sorry.
Exactly. Oh, we got someone else here. Oh, it's going very slow. Hi, Deb.
Hello.
How's it going?
We
were just talking about water slides.
I kind of forgot which show I called for a second, and I was like, "Oh, no duet."
No music.
Oh. Well, we were jamming out to Ace of Base. Oh, don't fly away.
There you go.
I don't know what's happening. Stephen went to deepest places of the earth, but then we got on the subject of water slides because we're really chaotic right now. I'm really curious as to what you guys thought of the videos you've watched and what you thought of them. And even if you did not bring a poem, you could still have the time to tell me what you thought about the videos. Just let me know you're ready. And, because I'm really excited to hear what you guys think. But I am going to, and I have my, before y'all leave anytime, let me know, because I'm going to be uploading the folder for next month, and I always like to tell you a little bit what we're doing next month so you get an idea, because I love it. So I'm pretty excited to present those to you. And without further ado, I will. So this one was a what if, so I don't have too much information about it. It was just watch the video and whatever bubbles to the surface. Dig deep to the reality or what you can learn, or write a fictional piece of what you might find in the depths below. So the ocean has always I've just always been enthralled. And I know that everybody is all about space. I'm not saying I don't like space. it's just the ocean is just like the fact that we have yet to explore. I mean, we've only really explored 5% of the Earth's ocean. And what's in the rest of it? You know, like, that's not a lot. And I think that's just not a lot. It's our own Earth, and I love it. I love the creatures down there. I've always been quite taken with it. I'm a Pisces, so I think maybe it just has to do with the water in general. But when you think about 5%, what's in the other 95%? So it's your job today to tell me what's in the other 95%. So I'm excited. Stephen, you're on board first. And you have the mic, and you can talk about whatever you want to talk about in whatever order you want to talk about it in.
All right. I'm being walked on, too. I apologize for that. I didn't have time to watch all the videos. The only one I really watched was the water slides. And like I said before, some of them looked really funny, while others looked like, no, thank you.
Exactly.
I've seen plenty of documentaries about the very deep areas of the sea, though. And, yes, I agree with you. Some of the creatures that are in those dark areas are very beautiful, and also some of them are very vicious. But they're all very cool to look at and check out. But this, like I said, it does speak of the deep ocean, but that's about all this does. this was, I believe, a picture prompt on a Monday. Yes, it was. From a year ago. And I call this Obsidian Opera of the Deep. Every opening here rises the court, pulling up seabed suction rusted hues, swirl of immensity's perfect storm under slate, vice gripping gossamer toothpick hull. Implacable seas, incessant tentacle wrath, tidal greeting and deadly coma's path, ocean's raging roar of revenge, since taking ace predator appendage. Capsizing confidence in under canoe, Cerulean biceps embrace the crimson doom. Lungs fill with fluid, Jones and block a room. Mariana Trench, lamenting ghosts loom. Obsidian opera of the deep, oxygen and hydrogen, eternal sleep. Loaded vessels are hollow shells. For the ghost of the victims, they dwell in hell.
Oh, this was brilliant. It was perfect. First of all, I think it does fit perfect. So if you watched, I know you only had time to watch one video, but if you watched the What If video, it talked a lot about the Mariana Trench. So this actually fit perfectly because a lot of that video was talking about the Mariana Trench. So a little bit before I make my comment about that, because it was in the video too, it is located in the Western Pacific Ocean, about 200 kilometers east of the Mariana Islands, and it's the deepest ocean trench on the Earth. It is a crescent-shaped and measures about 2,550 kilometers in length and 69 kilometers in width, and a maximum known depth of 10,984 meters. So I'm really excited that you brought this because that really, the video had a lot of that in it. First of all, if that was in the ocean, I would not be going on any boats ever. The chances of that happening. So I think it's dangerous out there enough without whatever's happening there. I love that you brought in David Jones' Locker because I'm a big fan of that kind of fiction, and it gave me a smile. And then the lamenting ghost. Now, if that was in the Mariana Trench, I think it would have enough room to build a home into it. So that's pretty cool. I also really like how you brought in, since taking ace predator appendage. I like that because, you know, it does a play, but it doesn't take the words, you know, an apex predator, but it implies it, but you say it in your own kind of way by saying ace predator, which I thought was pretty cool and how he took the place of every type of apex predator, and now this is the big guns in the ocean. Brilliant storytelling. Also, the vice-gripping gossamer toothpick hull was also really cool because in that big, look at that guy's size. It would be like a toothpick in that little tiny boat. So that's what it makes you think of. But when you think of some things in certain sizes and the way they compare to each other, I think that was a really cool little metaphor that you had, a little analogy. And, of course, I can't believe you've been doing the Monday night shows for a year, Deb. Time flies. Yeah, it was. And then the bloated vessels are now hollow shells. with their helpless victims just had like a deadly and gruesome end, and I loved it. Excellent.
Thanks.
And poor Hill in hell. Oh my goodness. All right. Excellent piece, and it applied more than you thought, because like I said, half the video was about the Mariana Trench. Iraq, what do you think?
Oh yeah, you did a great job, Steve. I like the the creatures in the ocean and the Mariana Trench and you know, there's a lot of craziness out there, but the thing that strikes me, you know, Sky, you were comparing it to space too. And, you know, if you think, you know, kind of outside the box a little bit, there's no oxygen in space and, you know, weightlessness. When you're underwater, it's kind of weightlessness and there's no oxygen, same kind of thing almost. So there's a lot of similarities between the two. And, you know, there's a lot of movies that fantasize about what you might find out in space, the creatures that you find out there. And, you know, we have the chance to actually explore the depths of the ocean and find what's really, you know, find the real ones. So you touch on that in your poem, which I thought was fantastic. I mean, there's so many crazy creatures down there. If you look, things adapt to their environment, you know. Fish with light bulbs on their heads and the one, the like the whale with the horn, the narwhal. And even when you take it to the fantasy world, what is it, Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you know, even he went to the giant octopus, which, you know, or the squid rather, whatever animal he had in his story. I'm saying octopus because you kind of put that thought in my head when you mentioned the apex predator. The octopus, there's a breed of octopus that actually, when it mates, takes its arm, its mating arm, its appendage, and throws it at the female. So he actually rips it off and says, here, take it. So, you know, I don't know how deep in the ocean he lives, but, you know, to make Sky feel a little better, you know, they adapt to that environment. They tend to not leave it, so you have to go down that deep to encounter them. So you don't have to worry about them coming up and saying hello. At least I don't think you do. The blobfish, I think that was probably in one of the videos. I didn't get to watch it either, but everyone talks about that damn thing. When you take them out of the depths, and he doesn't have the water to suspend him, it looks like this. Literally like a blob, so, you know, they just aren't made to survive outside of that environment. So, you kind of brought up thoughts of all of that, Stephen, with your poem, and, you know, you did it with a fantastic story and wonderful rhyme. So, I mean, it was beautiful. It was a great story.
Thank you, Rick. Guy is muted.
I talked her ear off, I think.
Of course,
it's going to be one of those days. I was just saying that I really do like the angular fish. Kay, what do you think?
Well, I do remember that because I think that was also the same week that I kind of got the same thing. Maybe that was a theme for the night because I had to do extra homework, I remember, for that one to try to. Because I know Greek mythology in its own way is a popular thing in all poetry, but that's not really my thing. So I had to do some homework to try to understand it a little bit more. So I like what you brought there because, yeah, you did bring the depth of the sea, the anger. There were certain things that made me think of certain things.
Yeah.
You know, but I'll whisper them.
Okay.
Because you'll understand. Right, it is, yeah.
Excellent comment. And Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I remember this one. I specifically remember it because of the one line ending there. They boil in hell. But I remember the photo too. I think you didn't get a choice on this. Wasn't this an assignment one, like where I gave it to you? Anyway, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I think that you did an incredible job with it, and the details are spectacular. And I remember about a year ago when you were just starting to roll in with those 10s. I don't mean to keep harping on them, but I'm so excited for you that you're way past 200. So, you know, all these ones that score high. I know that it's not about that, but for me, when I get a 10, it just gives me something to try and write a little bit better than. I only use it against myself type of thing, so it's fun to have it. So I think it's awesome. But the poem, Obsidian Opera of the Deep, was also quite a brilliant title. So it was a great share all the way around. And two things. Thank goodness I was muted when Rob commented, because when he said about ripping the tentacle off and tossing it at her, I had a completely different image in my mind, and I literally laughed out loud. That was an odd comment. I didn't know that. That was very cool. And Sky, we're about to celebrate our third year in March, so it's been well over two for the Monday nights. And yeah, time does fly. I can't believe it.
I know, at first you were, like, settling on what you wanted to do, but it's just, I can't believe it, yeah. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it took me about 6 months to figure it out, but yeah, and we're already, past the 2.5-year mark, so it's been unbelievably over 2 years already.
Yeah,
I had my graphics all the way in March.
I see that. The poetic. I've got almost all, if not all, actually. There's only a few I don't have. All my topics built for next year, all together and all ready for over a poetic. Like, is that like
got
literally
me.
till I have them already built? I don't, some of them are strays because I like to be a little bit like spontaneous on some of the movies I do, but they're built. I just have to grab them and date them appropriately. But all the rest of them are already mapped out and put together.
I love that. Me too. They're all in my draft. Everything's there, the photos, the instructions, everything. It's just not, like you said, not specifically assigned to a date yet, but I got into March or April in there. That's awesome.
There's only one thing. There's only one thing. I'm doing a series, and I only have up till October because I'm watching the series as I'm doing it. So I'm up to like October now, but it's gonna be fun. A lot of new stuff coming out next year for storyboards. So I'm very excited about that. But I want to thank you, Stephen, for bringing this piece and for coming and for hanging out. And speaking of poetic slice and storyboards, what have you got going on? What have we got going on over there?
Well, the next show over at Poetic Slice is tomorrow night at Poetic Anglings at 10 p.m. Eastern, and it is Agnes Cecil with her beautiful watercolor paintings that Kay finds and puts up for us to write to. So check out the paintings that are there to write to. There's a lot of cool ones. And then Thursday, we're doing a Veterans Day special at 9 p.m. Eastern, so the honor of the vets. And then Friday is Open Brevity, 130 words or less, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Awesome. And just to continue on to that, on Saturday, I am on again at Storyboards, which I was just talking about. And we will be celebrating one of my favorite movies that I've been waiting to do for a while. It's been in the lineup since pretty much I started. I just wanted to wait. It is going to be Forrest Gump. I do want to, there's a disclaimer on there. If you're going to use humor, and it's a very, there are very funny parts, I ask that you do it in good humor, in good positive humor, not in deprecating humor. You could write to any of the themes, scenes, characters, quotes. You can go anywhere you want. You could also write to any of the music or any of the events that Forrest just happens to stumble upon. There are so many different ways. You can go personal, you can go fiction, or you could do what what poetic is kind of, poetic slice is kind of coining here, an IMDb poem about the actors or any of the trivia in the film. Just bring your poem, and we'll hang out 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday. That's it. So, fun. All right. Now, Kay, did you want to talk about anything that you happen to like about any of the videos, if you saw any? You could say no. I'm just giving you the, in case you want to.
You were talking a little bit yesterday about those slides and some of those theme parks, you know, because as we were talking about yesterday, the one from Jersey. I went to a few parks like when I was a teenager, and even back then I was kind of panicking on the water slides. So anymore in my age, I'm going to have to say hell no to any water slides and a lot of different rides, because it's just not worth it.
You still
want to
ride one more roller coaster.
Yeah. Keep my feet on the ground, please.
Now, as I'm getting older, I used to really like roller coasters, but I've always been motion sickness. But it used to be, and I used to be able to be okay on most roller coasters. Some I could never do, even when I was young, because I get really bad car sickness. I'm terrible. But the last time I went to a theme park, I felt like with my age, it got worse. Because even the ones that I could do before were making me nauseous, and so I don't know what it is, but so I think I'm with you. I think that, you know, anything that goes backwards and swings up, I have to be cut out of that. Like it has to go it has to go forward, and that's about it. I think that, you know, it can go loops, but it's got to go forward. You know, it's got to be forward loops. It can't be going backwards and swinging up, because then I just cut right out of that. So I found another caller. I found him.
Not who you wrote.
Huh? What?
Don't say that name. That's not who it is.
It's not who it is? Oh, is
no,
it Lady
me.
A? Oh, it's 502-506. Oh, they're really close. Hi, Lady A.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't the guy.
I know. Well, it's the 502 and the 506. You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm so used to the callers that, you know, that I usually, the numbers that I usually see, I hardly ever keep my book around me. I should probably not do that. Hi, Lady A. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. We are talking about water slides, and then we got on the roller coasters, so it's getting kind of crazy in here.
Are you talking about, what is that what the topic is, roller coasters?
Well, there's three different prompts, and it's down the tube, so
you wrote
about any of the videos, the dangerous water slides, the deepest points of the earth, and the devil's kettle. So I'm really excited. I'm going to do something I don't normally do. I wrote for this show, and I'm going to drop mine early just in case people start dropping off, because sometimes I'll drop my piece and it's just me and Rack at. And I usually wait till the end of the night. And not that I don't appreciate, I think I dropped mine off completely last time. So I'm actually going to read next, if y'all don't mind. And then we're going to go in order of color. So I am going to do that. And then, okay. So I wrote to the prisoner of Azkaban. I love that meme. I really, really love that meme. I love it because I missed the backing away part when you first put it on, but now I see it. You see how he backs away? Stephen pointed this out. like, what is that? Oh, my goodness. For all the people that are listening, we're talking about a Tom Hanks meme, waving hi to, why can't I think, the clown from It, waving at each other.
Pennywise.
Oh, my goodness.
Pennywise.
I have a hard time getting my words sometimes when I'm on air. All right, so one of the prompts was the Devil's Kettle, and I, of course, went completely fictional, but I am going to tell you the actual things about it. So the Devil's Kettle, for decades, geologists from all over the Northland were perplexed by the kettle. Rumors ran rampant as people tried to figure out what was happening to all the water and from the waterfall going in and out. Some claimed that it led to an underground cave, which is where I went in my poem, kind of. Others said it flows through a lava tube down deeper in the earth. While these were logical guesses, the type of rock in Judge C.R. Magny State Park does not coincide with the underground caves or lava tubes. The next most logical thing to do was to throw things down the Devil's Kettle to see what it would come out. People threw everything down there, from sticks to logs to ping pong balls. Allegedly, a group of people even threw a car into the kettle, but this seems unlikely, highly unlikely, due to the size and the inaccessibility of the kettle itself. With everything being dropped into the mysterious funnel, nothing had ever been seen again. But in 2017, Minnesota hydrologist named Jeff Green decided to find out what was happening once and for all. Mm-hmm. He and a group of his peers measured the amount of water going into the falls along with the amount of water near the base of the falls, with the result being very similar. It was determined that the water was flowing into the Devil's Kettle was deposited right back into the Brule River somewhere near the falls. So my challenge to you guys was go anywhere you like, because that's my rule here. Hypothesize where the water went, if it was never found out what happened. How would you try to find out, you know, what kind of creative ideas do you find out where it went? Anything funny, serious, outrageous, or anything remotely related to the prompt was okay with me. I went what was down where the water was going, but I also brought in a little bit of fan fiction. I don't know if I dropped my own poem down here, so let me figure that out. And I brought in one of my favorite series. It is a children's book series, but it still is one of the, it holds up. It's one of the best series ever written, I believe. I've read it like four times. And when I mean I four times, I've read all 13 books four times. So I'm a little bit of a fangirl when it comes to this. It's from the Lemony Snicket series of Unfortunate Events, book 11, where they introduce the Grim Grotto. I know it's grotto, but I can't help it. I learned that word by reading it. That's what happens. So that's what happens when readers learn words by reading them. We just go, we think, sounds good. Yeah. So I'm excited. Here we go. Without further ado, this is called Medusoid Mycelium in the Devil's Kettle by Sky.com. Down in the Devil's Kettle, where fountains run unseen, there lies a burrow of Medusoid Mycelium, caverns of metro rivers, a web of ankylosing caves where none have ever been. Native to Gorgonian Grotto, these shadow-painted umbrellas wax and wane in brief, dormant cycles, then come alive with the speckled black spots, an airborne venom that decomposes vitals. Inhaled spores creep and crawl, expand thickened throats. In just 1 hour, they render dead any formidable host. Invented by none other than Gregor and Whistle, this bioweapon family has long tentacle threads, spreading hundreds of feet below, and somehow mobilized beyond its birth in the grim grotto. End quote. And if you want to know the fiction that I pulled from, it's down in the author's notes for later perusing, if you like, which obviously was Gregor and Whistle and the idea of the Medusoid mycelium and what it does and what it looks like. End quote. That's it.
Awesome. You down in the devil's kettle where fountains run unseen, there lies a burrow. And I can't even say that. I'm not going to try. But I like the way it starts out like a Twilight Zone episode, down in the devil's kettle. And then the details that you shared with us, reshaded, painted umbrellas, wax and wane in brief, dormant cycles. I like painted umbrellas, and they could be, and that's a really really clever descriptive metaphor there. And where is that? An airborne venom that decomposes vitals. The airborne venom's already scary enough, and then you think about the decomposition, and then more spores would come from that, and it's just like a vicious cycle. But in retrospect, they're kind of pretty too, and do they glow? You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. So I too am fascinated with, I mean, how do they find light under all that water? And I mean, you know, there's just so much. So and then they're spreading in hundreds of feet below. It's just, yeah, it was in the Grim Grotto. So the name was the ending, you know, with the name Grim Grotto was very clever because, you know, you think of Brothers Grimm, or at least I did. So I thought that you did a really cool job with this one.
Thank you, Deb. One of the cool things about that book series is they use alliteration throughout every book. I mean, you've got the Vile Village, the Penultimate Peril, the Grim Grotto, the Bad Beginning, the Ersatz Elevator. Everything has alliteration. Every title is just brilliant. It's a really great series, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the alliteration adds a whimsicalness to things, so it goes quite well.
Thank you, Dad.
Back on tour. What do you think of Sky's poem?
I really enjoyed this. It appeals very much to my childish fantasies, in the sense of, you know, I could picture, you know, younger minds especially going, well, what other explanation could there be? There's something down there just eating everything. You know, it's dissolving, and you know, you offer up a believable technical explanation with the mycelium and whatnot, but, you know, at the same time, that kind of enforces the idea of, you know, well, that there's that something that they're thinking is down there. So, and you know, it's really an intriguing thought, because it's one of those things where, depending on how true it is, you know, the it kind of makes its own legend, you know, or I shouldn't say how true, but the believability of it, you know, it's one thing to take something that sounds plausible and make it appear to be true, and, you know, this plays to that fact, I think, and you know, the fiction that you base it on is wonderfully woven in as well. You know, I really enjoyed it. It's whole little world almost, and you know, not even almost, quite literally. You know, the grotto could be its own little adventure. You know, if it was Dungeons and Dragons, it could be a campaign. Really, really well done.
Thank you, Rex. That's a good idea.
And Stephen, please.
Yeah, I like this too. We have to agree with it, right? But I see it. But that takes you straight to your death. So I told you my comment, long story short, stay under the kettle, especially if you prefer breathing. But perhaps maybe a water slide that takes you right through it.
That would have been a good idea to tie it in.
This is awesome, Sky. Very cool.
Thank you, Stephen. There is a remedy. It's wasabi or horseradish. So if you go down there, just stick some horseradish in your pocket, and you'll be able to have a remedy.
Oh, my sushi lunch. Box lunch.
Stephen, is Kay still there with you?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking at the author's notes, and I have to say, first off, I hate mushrooms and I hate horseradish. Yeah, so, you know, the author's notes are something else because it brings a lot there already. I have not read the series of books, Lemony Snicket, so I'm not sure as to what that's really about. So that is new to me. But I like how you speak about the edges of darkness. Bringing in the metaphors, airborne, kind of like mold, an infection that's deadly. But yeah, if horseradish was my only hope, I would still pass.
Maybe you can mix it with some ketchup.
Oh,
it's the only way I'll eat it is this cocktail sauce. It's pretty good that way.
Mix it with the mashed potatoes.
Gotta find the ketchup though.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Kay.
Well, one more. Yeah. Sis, do you want to comment for Sky, please?
Yeah. I think, and I've said this before, your ability to transfer your own thoughts and blend them in with those that you've read about and come up with your own story is always interesting and exciting, and I think you've done that with this. I think, you know, you have a great imagination, and this is such great creativity. I do know of Lemony Snicket. Some of the other ones that I'm not familiar with, but I think that, you know, the best way to describe your taste, I guess, is the imagination of the type of literature that you read is always very creative and almost so far-fetched that it grabs you and holds you there until you can understand what you're seeing or reading. And I think you have that same gift to be able to do that with your poetry, and that you're pulled into it and you got to get to the end to see where it all culminates. But I think overall you have a tremendous ability to write whatever you dream up and incorporate it with what you've read, and that's the beauty of it.
Thank you, Lydia. I appreciate that. I do love that about reading. One of the best things for me for sometimes inspiration is books. So I think they're quite brilliant. Before anyone goes anywhere, if you want to just look real quick, I do want to say thank you for calling, Stephen and Kay. And I do appreciate you calling. I know you're going to go. Oh, you already looked at it. Kay, so fast. Thank you guys for calling in. And I hope you guys have a good evening. Enjoy that good dinner that you teased me with.
Oh, my
and,
God.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to hear your reaction live. That's the only reason why I brought this out live. So thank you. I'm really excited.
Oh, my God.
Did you see what I said?
I was going to put the picture of, Family Guy picture. You know what picture I'm talking about, Stephen, right? But I thought that would be I thought that would be a little bit too much. Oh, I didn't. All right, so if everyone live wants to know what we're laughing about, it's about halftime. I usually bring out what we're doing next month so you guys can have an idea. I don't go over all the details because I do that in the show, but I give you a quick highlight as a topic that's opening. Stephen, oh, my gosh, Stephen's got me laughing. I knew you were going to love it. I couldn't help myself. So if you guys click on that link, I'm just going to give you the titles because I just want to give you a heads up. What's up for next month? It's the it's the Lost City of Angkor Wat. So you could write to basically anything of that topic. That one's a little bit longer. It's 22 minutes National Geographic, but it's really good. There's lots of information. It's really awesome. I'm going to skip the second because I think we'll all die after that. But the third is 50% of our oxygen, guess what, comes from the ocean. From what? From these little tiny little plankton, which is amazing. It also is why we exist. It helped build the foundation to build our complex life form. So if you really want to know how that came, that evolution came about, go look during the Devonian period. Go look at that video. It's really cool. And the third, which is actually the second, and I couldn't quite help myself, was Let's Talk Farts. So if you want to hear the science behind why you should not hold it in, click that video. It's actually very fun and informative. It's very informative, too. It's not just, like, crazy stuff, but there are a lot of crazy things in there. So I hope you like that SpongeBob picture. I thought we could have a little fun, and I can already tell Steven's quite taken with it. So.
He's squinting. He squishes.
Oh. So, I'll be looking forward to that for next month.
Oh my God.
All right, thanks, guys. All right, I'm glad you like it. I'm glad we're going to have fun with that. I'm excited. I think I know which one Steven's going to write to. I'm not sure, but I have a feeling.
You think there might be a family guy picture on the top?
I wanted to bring that, but I thought it would be a little too much, so I had to go I had to go publicly. I was hoping you might bring me a Family Guy picture, to be honest with you, or maybe like that meme. But I had to be, you know, a little. I had to contain myself a little bit for the topic. So. All right, thanks guys for coming in. I appreciate it, and I'll see you when I see you.
Take care.
Oh my goodness. All right. Whew. Do I got everybody else still there? We're just having a laughing fit.
No.
No.
I'm trying to hide from the smell.
What did I send you, Deb? I gave Deb a pre-warning. I said, wait till you get a whiff of my next topic. And then I sent her just a picture and no other information.
Love her.
I don't know. There was a little bit of information about a fart there. Just saying.
It was in the thing. It was in the picture.
Okay. Next time someone makes an unfortunate odor around you, ladies, just smile and say, your voice changed, but your breath still smells the same.
Hey, that video has scientific facts. It's not just all crazy. There are, like, real important facts that you should read. I mean, or listen to, rather.
About decomposing things in science.
Yeah, like, it's really cool. Learn some stuff. we are going to go. So, Rack also brought the Devil's Kettle, and since mine was on the long lines of that, I have that. And let me just see here. Did you drop your poem, Lady A?
Yeah, I didn't drop it yet. I'm just trying to find the picture to put with it, and then I'm going to put it in there and finish it, though.
No worries. Okay, so here's the lineup. This is what we're looking like. We're going to do... I definitely don't have Hot Pockets there, Justin. Hi, Justin, on the board. We're going to do Rack, and then we're going to go to Deb, and then we'll go to Lady A, and then I've got a SoundCloud from Phil. As of right now, that's where we're going. And I already talked about the Devil's Kettle. So you could talk about whatever you want to talk about, Rack, and you have the mic.
Well, I'll just say real quick, it's kind of more of a story than poetic prose, I think, but I took the kettle portion of the Devil's Kettle and made it into a somewhat New Orleanian artifact. So with that, I'll let you have at it.
All right. Back in tour. All right.
Soup Kettle by Raconteur. I was cold and hungry when I wandered into the little restaurant somewhere down a back alley in the French Quarter of New Orleans. An old-fashioned soup kettle hung in the fireplace that warmed the dining area. As I was seated, I asked the waitress what she would recommend, and she replied that the gumbo was magical. She went on to explain how the chef bought the kettle at auction. It was at least 13 generations ago when a potion was brought to life in it. A list of ingredients and their precise measurements written in a long forgotten tongue were handed down with the cauldron itself when the time came. But the miraculous quality of this brew, despite evaporation and its usage over time, the flame beneath never extinguished, and inside was always full, making the simmering concoction as old as the burgundy ink used to chronicle the arcane ritual on the brittle parchment, keeping the elixir viable in perpetuity. There are those that say it was an act of vengeance, while others claim it was merely carelessness. But the aftermath of the catastrophe was undeniable. There was a perfect ebony circle of charred earth where the hut once stood, and at its center sat the ancient cauldron, an anachronism appearing to have been meticulously placed several feet from the remains of the fireplace where it used to hang. The cauldron bore no evidence of ever being used and appeared as pristine as the day it was forged. Inside were the unintelligible remains of an ancient parchment, the only evidence suggesting it was the same artifact that bubbled for generations in the fireplace. I said, "I'll have the andouille sausage and a glass of sweet tea with lemon, please." The waitress chuckled and said, "Coming up." End poem.
Excellent. I love the storytelling and where you went with it. Now, in the, I can't remember what it was. It was the Black Cauldron series. Have you ever seen the Black Cauldron series? It was the Paradin series. Yeah, well, there's a book series. There's like a book of five books, and it's actually called the Paradin series. And the Black Cauldron was the Disney animation film in the 80s was based on this five-book series. It was actually the second book in the series. But in the first book, if I recall, no, it was in the second book. They had this. I don't remember. It was in the first or second book. They had this. Type of bag or something that had food, and it would never run out of food. You just go in it, and there was food. So it kind of reminded me of that idea. I can't remember exactly. It's been a while. It's been a tick since those are young readers' books, and I read them quite a while ago. But I remember. I love that idea. So first of all, the idea of you taking this whole fantasy story. First of all, you brought me a fantasy story, which I love. I love that you brought the French quarters of New Orleans, because I'm a big Anne Rice fan. I like the vampire notions and all the history behind the French quarters, and that people usually bring in the witches and the vampires, and how they were kind of like at war with each other in the French quarter. So the fact that this witch brew was in the French Quarter was even more brilliant to that whole idea, which I'm sure wasn't a coincidence. I'm sure you picked that specific place for those reasons exactly, which I like even more. And then the whole storyline, you know, 13 generations ago, you put a history behind it. You put a timeline, and every little detail like that when it comes to storytelling builds it to a more realistic life and setting and place and characters, because it's those small details that make it more tangible for the reader, not just saying, oh, this is that, but actual lineage which and history, which I enjoyed. And then I also love this little twist, you know, it, talking about obviously the simmering and building up to it, and then you've got that twist in the end, the ebony charged circle of earth and the hut once stood, you know, the sacrifice that that becomes of people that are trying to brew in this ancient cauldron. You know, you don't want to mess in metal and affairs that you don't quite know, and magic is definitely one of them. And one of the themes that I often see in magic is you always have to pay the price, right? Well, I think these people did. So, and then you have the little bit at the end, this little bit of playful banter and humor, cleverness at the end. Okay, coming right up. Very, very well done. And I cannot say enough how much I enjoyed the storytelling in this. Thank you, Rack.
Yeah, my pleasure. The your cauldron, the bag that you were talking about in Dungeons & Dragons was a Bucknerd's Everfill purse, and it always had a coin in it.
Yeah, but it wasn't in Dungeons & Dragons, though.
I'm just saying there's a parallel to it, yeah. The whole book.
There's a magical item.
Yeah.
You're going to have to take that name after, because when we're talking about magical items, next game, I want that one. That's really interesting. They have that. You know, they have those kind of things, I guess, they're all throughout fiction, too. Because if you remember my Deb, who has now watched all the Harry Potter series, they had that idea of the magical bag with basically everything that you want. And Mary Poppins had a bag just like it. I'm just saying. So
yeah.
it's a cool idea.
Like,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about Felix the Cat. Oh, my goodness, that was a while ago. Deb, what do you think about Rack's poem?
Oh, I think that it came out really awesome. The details in your words, they sort of paint the story in your mind, in the mind as we listen to you read, and then the details, like, drive it. But I really, it was at least 13 generations ago when a potion was brought to life. In it, a list of ingredients and their precise measurements written in a long-forgotten tongue. It's those little details that give credence to the whole story, making a shimmering concoction as old as the burgundy ink. Even the wording has like an old-time feel to make you really feel for the ingredients of this concoction and wondering about it bubbling and churning green and... I liked that the word elixir's in there. I can't find it, but I remember liking it. And then the cauldron bore no evidence of ever being used and appeared as pristine as the first day. I mean, really, really brilliant details to bring us all the way down to that waitress chuckled and said, coming up. And maybe that's when you run. Maybe that's when you order extra cheese. I don't know, but really cool.
The idea
awesome.
Was, you know, she was pushing what was in the crock pot. She was pushing what was in the kettle, and I ordered the sandwich instead. I wasn't touching the kettle after that story.
Well, you're smart. You're very smart. Lee Yeh, what do you think?
Well, he has a great ability to have that soothing voice scare the crap out of you with his poetry, and I think that let me just yeah you know, the cauldron pot and everything like that. I think Rack has, even though you have some scary voices out there that can do a scary poetry, he does it best because his voice is so soothing and convincing, and you get dragged into it quite easily, I think. And I think it was a really creative too, and several feet from the remains of the fireplace where it used to hang. I think the cauldron pot itself, everything that you've put into this is a fantasy story that was really interesting. And I wanted to ask you why you used the French Quarter of New Orleans.
Well, Sky touched on it. It's the history of New Orleans itself, and the witches and everything else, and the mystique of it. But you know, it's a place that I love for a lot of different reasons, and I definitely, you know, the food there is unbelievable. So, and being there on any cold night, you know, the stories that get told and the whispers and whatnot. They have shops that are dedicated to the voodoo from the area as well, and you know that you could buy you literally buy like chicken feet, you know, to use this talisman and things like that. There's a lot about the magic in the French Quarter and the stories, so that was why I chose the French Quarter.
Excellent.
But, there's another little nugget of information I think you guys would appreciate too. The idea of the never ending soup. There's actually a soup brewing right now in I think it's in Singapore. When I checked, it was 45 years old. What they do is I think they call it a generation soup. The idea of they call it a mother sauce. What they do is it brews all day long, and at the end of the day, they reserve some. Keep it simmering, clean out the kettle, and then put it back in and leave it brewing overnight. So, and they use that as the base for the next day's soup. It's a beef noodle soup. So you could actually have this soup in China, and it's 45 years old right now. So or older at this point. But yeah, it's I won't say well known, but it's out there. The idea is, you know, as things boil down and simmer down, they concentrate in flavor, and it's like how a stock is made and things like that. So they expanded that idea, and they're using it for the soup. So there's actually a soup that's 45 years old out there in China.
Wow.
That's cool. That's an interesting random fact. I like that. I don't know if I would try it. I would be a little hesitant. I don't know about that. But it's cool to think about. So thank you, Rack, and thank you for bringing me the poem. And it was brilliant. And I have got...
Click the second link, please. I changed something.
Oh, okay. All right. I was wondering, like, did I do something wrong? Okay.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So, hold on. We talked briefly about the water slides, but if you would like, instead of me explaining, because I don't really, obviously there's no notes on it, there's just what was in the videos, but if you would like to talk about it before your poem, instead of me, that'll be cool. If you don't want to, I can, but you know, you could tell me where you went, what was your inspiration, and I'm looking at this picture and I'm thinking I know which one.
Yeah, no, we can sort of do both because like I didn't go on a specific one, and you'll see why when we get there. But as far as it goes, I think that if you live in the area where there is a bigger water park, they make the news a lot, and you see people. Flying off the sides and smashing into guardrails or fences or the barriers that make the chute that you slide through. and then you see the reports on the information channels where you're like water sliding in toilet water type of thing. They don't always use the proper amount of chlorine. So there's all these gross things that you think of, and the older you get, the more the thought of the germs gross you out. So between the germs and the injuries and, like, little things, for example, if it takes 25 seconds to go from point A to point B on a water slide, the people who run them are told to send people down every 20 seconds to make a little bit of extra money. And then quite often, if there's the slightest lapse in slide, which does happen sometimes, whether your tushy sticks to it or, you know, whatever the case may be, if you get delayed, then you get kicked in the head or it's like a traffic jam, and they don't wait the 25 seconds anyway. They just keep them rolling. So it's sort of one of those, it's fun, but enter at your own risk kind of thing. And the enter at your own risk thing was what made me pick the photo that I chose at the top of the palm, because, like, is that where you want your water slide to end? It was just, you know, the picture was too awesome to pass up anyway. Now, what did you want to say about water slides?
Yeah, well, I think you're good, but I just want to add one thing, what you were saying about doing it not enough time to put more people through, because that was in the video. But when you think about it, you're like, okay, so you might hit another person. I just want you to realize that some of these people that are sliding, they're going 50 miles an hour. The fastest speed ever achieved on a water slide is 57 per mile, but a lot of them average about 50. So when you think about hitting somebody else's body at 50 miles an hour, that is not just something, that's not a little bump. That's not a little,
Well,
I think you did a great job.
Especially when you start to factor in mass and whatnot, you know, like a little 110-pound woman getting hit by a 250-pound guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's crazy. You know, some of those water slides, like I was saying earlier, lift you right up, and then some of them had, like, retracting doors. So you just stand with your feet on it, and then it opens up like a trap door and has you fall through, and then it opens back and it closes back up. And then there's reports of the trap door malfunctioning, and somebody's just, like, half-hanging. I mean, I know that you got to live your life, but I don't know. That's a little... I ain't living my life like that, but I'm excited to see what you did with the prompt. Thank you for talking about it a little bit for our listeners to kind of get an idea what the prompt is and what the videos were like. And, you know, one of the videos, real quick, too, they went through down the slide, and then they went through a tube. Oh, there's fireworks or something or a tire popping. I'm not sure what's happening out there. They go through the tube, and then you go underwater, and there's just all sharks swimming around down there. I don't know about that, so I don't think I'm okay. So, all right, Deb, I'm excited to hear your poem, so you've got the floor.
Okie dokie. This is called You Took Me Out on a Date Straight from Hell. Here we go. Shot through the chute, and you're to blame. You give water slides a bad name. An angel smile, but then we fell. Face past the guardrail, road rash burned like hell. Stains from blood are all over me. Sands in the incisions, pus oozes, you see. I am the loaded gun. Ouch. Me, stuck with nowhere to run. Save me now, baby, the damage is done. Shot through the chute, and you're to blame. You give date night a bad name. The pool water's cold, and there's pee on you. Give them water parks a bad name. Algae is sucked down into the lungs.
water slides are just too lame. They cripple and they maim. They maim. End song.
Oh, I'm cringing. Oh, is there anything you want to say before I get comments? Deb. I'll give you the chance after I comment because I don't think I can hold my comment. First of all, I have to recover from this. I'm sorry. It's all those pictures and then your words and bringing, first of all, I'm lost in clarity. I know, the whole thing with this, the blood and the maiming, the pee is the least of my concern at this point through your poem. I'll take the pee over all that. Oh, my goodness. Wow, this is creative. When I pick these prompts, I never know what people are going to do. I'm going to do it because I want to. Not because, I'm just like, I'm going to do it, and that's what's going to happen. And it always surprises me. This is just brilliant. Let me gather my thoughts for a second because I'm a little, I never read yours first. So whenever you read them, I have to collect myself, especially if it's like this.
I love it.
So this is, I love the parody, first of all. As soon as you said the first line, I was like, huh, maybe she was just doing that to get it started. And then I realized it was a parody to the whole thing, and I was so excited because I love parodies, and you did it so good. If anybody brought me out on a date like this, I think it would be the last date that we had. That would be, and if I survived, I think that, it would be, I'm good. I'm going to go back in my house now. Not do that again. I thought it was so clever. Shot through the chute and you're to blame. You give water slides a bad name. I really love that, and I'm going to tell you right now, Deb, that I'm going to be singing that next time that song comes on, and I'm going to be just hysterically laughing, and no one's going to know what's happening. I'm just going to die of laughter. And then I like how you changed it at the end, too. You give date night a bad name. You keep the chorus, but you change the line, which I also thought was quite brilliant. I was cringing. I was cringing at this part. The angle, the face smash and guardrail, road rash burns like hell, stains of blood are all over me, sands and the incinerate and the incisions in the pest that you see. And then you get down to, where was it? This whole thing, algae sucked down into lungs and, oh my gosh, and the cripple and the maim. I was just, this is why, and then you got that picture right below of the guy flying off over the edge. This is just too much for me right now. I don't know why I got this thought up. You're just staring the heck out of me. This is great. I can't believe your creativity. This was really fun, as you could tell by me completely scattered in that comment. So I appreciate it. Brilliant.
And how about this poor guy on the very last one before the Bon Jovi song? He's all out of there and sliding down another. I mean, he's who I. He's got his little Speedo on, and he's. I think it might. I mean, I can't even. It just looks like it hurts so bad.
Okay. See, I didn't even see that picture because I was following along to the poem. But after while I was making my comment, I was looking into pictures more. But now I see it. That's cement.
Yeah, and it's like the edge, and he took the edge. First he slams out of the plume into it, and then slides all the way to the other end along ouch.
Now, why do people do these things? I don't understand. Okay. All right, let me just
look at the still shot. I couldn't find one of that moving, but this chick's up there with the freaking skyscrapers. Is she insane? I can't believe they're allowed to do that without some kind of gating or railing. I wouldn't even try that one when I was young, let alone now. Just saying.
That one, I think, is Photoshopped, But there are ones, because if you look in the first video that I did, that one is, like, high with like, the tops of buildings high. So it's very accurate to what there is actual. I think that one might be Photoshopped because you can kind of tell. But it doesn't – but the fact is that the ones in the video were that high. And they go straight down. And the idea of it is that once you go over that bump, you're seeing the view of the entire city. And you're at the highest point for, like, 1 second. And then you're dying. You're like shooting down for 5 seconds. And then, like, some of the people in the video, some of the workers, they said that the people cry. And I'm like, I would be crying, too. Oh, my God, I would be crying. Because, it, you know, this one has a swirl. This one just went straight down. And they do it to do it at the tops of videos. And there is something else around, but I'm going to use it for another show, so I'm not going to give it out. But there's also something else that's really insane that they do on the tops of cities like this, and like this video here that they have. I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm saving it for another day. But it is outrageous, and I just would not do that. So tune in, folks.
I know the one you're talking about.
Oh, my goodness. You'll have to tell me later, and I'll see if I know if it's the right one. But let me get you – did I get you anybody's comment? I don't know because I'm completely into the poem. Rex,
I don't know. I think you were so enthusiastic that I don't remember.
Yes,
I don't remember either. You've been – got the host's attention when I don't even know what's going on anymore. What do you think about the poem,
Rex? I mean, all I could say, Deb, is you're a pisser. You definitely captured the whole water park. I don't want to say tragedy, but the perils of the water park. I remember back when, I think it closed by now, but, you know, over here in Jersey, we've got Great Adventures, and then it was also in the same breath, you would always say Action Park, and Action Park had a lot of those slides, and they had one, it was kind of like a bobsled that you went down on this cement ramp, and, you know, you picked up nothing but speed. You laid down like a bobsled, and it just picked up momentum as you went along. And if you fell off, you know, the road rash that you're talking about, it's nothing more than a cement trench. And you would slide if you didn't, like, slap your arm to stop yourself or anything. You would slide a great distance. And their first aid station was very active. So, yeah, it's not a pleasant thing to get the road rash from any of those. And, you know, you get scars. You know, I don't remember how long ago it was, but my elbow is still all scarred up from when I slid off of one of their little scooters going down. I must have been going at least 30, 35, and there was no water and no nothing. And, you know, it's summer, so, you know, you don't have shirts on or anything like that. So it's really wild. But you captured all of that in your I can imagine, you know, who thought this was a good idea for a date?
probably nobody, but it just seemed kind of funny. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I looked at it, and I'm thinking you shoot through the air like an idiot, and then I'm like, shot through the ooh, and then it just sort of, and I was worried because at first I wasn't sure which way to go with it, and then I thought, let me see if I can, you know, I see she's already giggling again. I like making Sky giggle, so there you go.
I want to say the added nuance to this, whether planned or not, you know, Bon Jovi's from New Jersey, and New Jersey has those two very famous, you know, water parks, the two very the theme parks. So, you know, I'm sure there's more out here, but, you know, everyone knows about. I should say, Great Adventures not just here in Jersey, but, you know, since Bon Jovi's from Jersey, that made it even funnier for me.
Yeah, and we have. We have one not too far from here in Clementon, New Jersey. It was called Clementon Park. It may still be. But all kinds of bad things were happening there year after year after year, and it was just like it was infamous more for the notoriety of terror than the fun that you have there, you know? And it became a place where when my daughter's toddlers was amazing, and then as it went away from being a toddler place and the bigger kids came, I think that's what it is. They thought little kids were going to be coming down, and then the bigger you are, that the faster you slide down that thing, and then you wind up with people like in one of those last photos where they just don't make it around that bend because they're, you know, whatever. But, yeah, and if you're going to pick on Jersey, you got to do something good, and you don't get much better than Bon Jovi and Bruce or stuff like that. So, yeah, I did want to use one of their songs on purpose. So it all worked well. But I'm glad you picked up on it.
Awesome. And Lady A, what do you think about Shot Through the Chute in your two-play? I would be singing that every time now.
That was really creative to do a parody with the song, for sure. But I looking at the pictures, that first one with the two girls that are slowing down considerably going down that slide, and then somebody right on their tail, the force in which those girls were hit with that other slider was amazing. And I'm thinking like kind of injuries. You can see her neck and her head thrust back, and it's, as a nurse, I look at that and think how utterly dangerous that is. Oh,
yeah,
whiplash.
Yeah, no, you're right. And if you, one that I just pointed out, the sky is the guy that's out of the, gets thrown out, he came down behind the other guy who was slowed up and ricocheted. So imagine at first he slammed into that man and ping-ponged or pinballed over and tilted into the wall. So it's like, it's tragic all the way around.
It would be interesting to know what those injuries were, but we have a water park in our area, and they have what they call the kamikaze slide, and it's I don't know how many feet high it is, but it goes straight down. There's no loop-de-loos. You just get on it, you lay down, cross your arms on your chest, and down you go. It's just straight down, and there's, to my knowledge, there hasn't been any injuries, but it's a terrifying slide, and my middle girl went down that slide when she was probably, well, tall enough. I'm going to say she was probably 9, and I was screaming my head off at the foot of it because I thought, trying to get the lifeguard or whoever is in charge up there to stop her from going down, because I was petrified she'd fall off of it. And anyways, it was quite an experience, I'll tell you. I'm scared of those things too. He did a great job with the parody, and it just, you know, we got to be a little smarter, I think, hey?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Just look at the picture on the board. That was the first one. That was in, now it's all muddling together. I'll get you the name to where that's from after. Video.
Straight down like that, yep. Kamikaze,
That's the one where they lose contact with the slide. Can you imagine just flying?
Yes.
Like with Rex, that's just dropping. You're losing contact of the slide. And
you're not sliding, you're falling.
That's just too much for me. And look at the view, like right over the top. They say it's a beautiful view, and that's how I gotta figure out which one that is. But they say like for a second you get the whole view of the entire city from that height. And before you start panicking, I
Unless your eyes are closed when you're screaming, yeah.
I know. Well, I'm not overly adventurous. I tend to be a little bit more cautious, but my friend and I actually don't like heights. Like I don't want to not like heights. I'm like, oh no, it's fine. But then when I get at a high place, physically, my body starts to shut down in panic. And then I just think you're being just ridiculous. Like there's no mind over body in that instance. My body completely takes over, and I'm telling myself in my head, "You're being ridiculous. Knock it off." But my legs are shaking, and I literally have to sit so that I don't fall. It is a reaction. But I did go. My friend wanted to go for her birthday to go. Zip lining, and since there were I did some research on this park, and you know their safety ratings were really good. They had like 5 or 6 clips, so you were never not clipped at least by 3 clips, because they clipped you, they took you, and they clipped you from one wire and they clipped you to the other wire, click, unclick, click, click. So you're always clicked 5 times to at least one various wire. So I did do this. I did do that, and it was a wonderful experience. But I felt the safety of being clicked in. I definitely would not do that because there's no clicking or secure. There's nothing holding you. There's no harness. There's nothing. There's just air, and that's not okay for me. So, But I did. I was quite proud of it, too, the zip lining, because – like I said, I'm quite afraid of heights, and they made us do these weird things, and I couldn't do them. And, you know, my friend, she wore one of those, do you know one of those little adventure cameras that you put on, like, a helmet, because we had to wear helmets and stuff, and she clipped it on her helmet, which was cool because you get to see her experience, but guess who it had on the whole video the whole time? It had me on the video, because
she was looking at me,
so I'm like, yeah, so I'm like, it's great, but maybe I should have worn it to show you doing it. And then she's like, yeah, but then you could see my experience. I'm like, yes, but you just see me panicking, because they made us do these trust things. Like, we had to go to the edge. Like, first, there was like a series. It was a series of zip line. It wasn't just one. It was up on a mountain, and you make your way down the mountain. And the first one, they just do normal, and then they start to get creative. They're like, oh, you got to go backwards, and you got to do like a trust fall. Has anyone ever done a trust fall where you put your arms out and you just fall back, and you're supposed to trust that someone's going to catch you? It's like an exercise. Well, try doing that in the air while you're strapped. So you see me on the video. You're supposed to stand straight up and fall back. You see me when it comes to doing it. I crouch all the way down so I'm almost sitting on the platform and then fall back. I couldn't do it. I was so scared. And then they make you do the walk. So you have to close your eyes, put your arms out, and not hold on to the rope that you're hanging, because usually you would hang on to the rope. You have to put your arms out and walk off the ledge and just fall, which I panicked on that one too. I think the only one I did good was you had to try to take your rope that you're holding and hold your body in like a cannonball position. Like, you're supposed to tuck your legs up. So you go pretty fast because your body is all together. And a lot of people, you have to hold your body weight. So you literally have to take the rope and pull your body up with the body weight. It was the only one I can do. And I was very proud of it. I was like, I could do that when every other one I failed, because it involves things that are not normal.
Yeah.
So, but it was a good, experience. So. I was like, I'm not closing my eyes. I'm going to have to watch that video after, Lady A. All right. Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Deb. Talking about crazy stuff. We're going to go.
And if
we're
I disappear,
go.
If I disappear, the battery died, just saying.
Okay, well, I thank you for before you disappear, can you plug some shows? Oh, and Rack, you too. Everybody plug shows, actually.
Yeah, sure. Tomorrow is Crystal Hope, and she is on at 9 p.m. Eastern, and she has some opposites for you to choose from. And she would like you to pick your pair of opposites and then write what they inspire. And she's got like 15 choices, such as love versus hate, cheap versus expensive, creative versus destroy, inside versus outside. So you get the gist. So you just choose one of those and run with it. And Thursday, my sweet's going to come and do her show an hour early, so that's 10 p.m. rather than 11, 10 p.m. Eastern. She's going to host open poetry. And then on Friday night, I have to double AP. I believe it's a Tic-Mac Po night, so stay tuned for that. And Saturday is Auroras, and that's at 11 p.m., and you can choose the Aurora Borealis or the Aurora Australis and take it wherever you would like. Sunday, click the adult room to find out, because I don't think it's totally planned yet, but it will happen at 10 p.m., and then Monday, pick your mirror and show up and tell me what's inside. Personal prompts. Thank you, Sky. And I will stay until
Thank
the phone
you.
Talk.
Awesome. So what I'll do then, I'll have Lady A and Brack plug after to see if I can get you to comment on Lady A before your phone dies. So remind me, guys, you still need to plug your shows, but I want to get Lady A read so that, you know, she could get a comment from Deb, too. All right, and I'll even let Deb go first, because I take 18 hours to comment, I guess. But, yay, you have
yes.
the board. You can talk about anything you want, and you can read. You can do whatever. You're in charge now.
Well, I took the prompt was what you found, the creatures that you found in this, you know, under the deepest part of the oceans. And I put some reality into it because I picked some real creatures. And I love the ocean probably more than anybody in the world. And when I get out too far or if the water is too warm, then I have to hurry up and get back in because I scare the crap out of myself. Because, you know, I always think there's a shark lurking nearby. They always get a great white around the somewhere in the Maritimes, usually off the coast of Nova Scotia. But they're present for sure. And I think they tracked, I don't know, four or five of them this past summer. And so while the ocean is a great playground, it is certainly a territory undiscovered in a lot of ways and with some pretty terrifying critters that are in it. So this is what I wrote on, is the fear found far from anywhere, really. Thousands of leagues below, an abyss deeper than we know. Creatures so hideous, they hide in the depth chateau. Frightful are these beasts with fins, gills, and pointed teeth. Some have a natural glow, blue, gold, purple, weave through reefs. Atlantic and Pacific Oceans are home to the frilled shark. Deep sea monster swims devouring squid, unlucky to be its target. And goblin sharks with teeth to remark, 50 jammed into its mouth. Then the vampire squid, no blood diet, feeds on marine snow. Should you dare descend below where pressure can crush a man, take a mini submarine, its pressurized cabin, and 360-degree view. You come upon the frightening sights in the dark of ocean's night, gasp, scream, pray it's a dream. These sights create fear extreme. End poem.
Excellent. I'm really going to try to contain myself because I said I would let Deb go first, but I'm really excited because I love so many of these things. Deb, you go first.
I was going to say, the for one, the tone in your voice while you were driving your details in added to it. I thought it was really cool. And I never knew that there was such a thing as a vampire squid. And I find that fascinating. And on a side note, I also found myself wondering if Silk had ever heard of a vampire squid. But anyway, goblin sharks with teeth to remark, 50 jammed into its mouth. Then the vampire squid, no blood diet, feeds on marine snow. It's like, should you dare descend below? I don't know. It's like not when I'm listening to some of the descriptions that you added to this poem. And then that fine gas, scream, pray, it's a dream. These sites create fear, it's a dream. Hell yeah. I think if I, with the sincere and total joy I get from the ocean, if I met this critter there, I think that putting my toes in the edge would become a little more my style. Wow, vicious stuff. And I'll, on another side note, earlier you said something about, right before you mentioned the sharks, you said something about swimming through a warmer part of the water or something. We always used to tease when we were swimming down at the shore that when you, you're like, oh, I found a warm spot. Here for a while, and until the first time my dad said, that's because you're swimming in whale pee, and now I tend to get out of the warmer spot as quick as I can, because it, whether it's true or not, it's pretty plausible that a big old whale could have just peed, and I'm feeling the warmth of his body. So I'm like, and then after I thought about it, I'm like, the whale would probably have urine the same temperature as the water since he's swimming in there, so my dad's probably nuts, but it stuck with me. You know how that goes. So
yeah.
It made me think of a conversation with my dad. So thanks for that. Great share.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Awesome comment, Deb. I'm so excited about this piece because I actually do know a lot of these creatures that you brought in because I've watched a lot of documentaries on the ocean, and I brought in one creature. It was the starfish. I did starfish zombies, if you remember. That was one of the topics mm-hmm. for the show. But I already have in my lineup actually the vampire squid. I just haven't brought that out yet because I try to. I tend to go towards water prompts. Huh?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I was going to get a picture and put it in the room, but if you've got one right handy, why don't you throw it in the room? Because it's pretty amazing.
Oh, I don't have it. I don't have it. I can get one. So what I do is I have a little like cheat sheet over, you know, on my topic build thing of all the future shows that I want to do or ideas. And I try to do like one water, one science, one fort. Like I try to break it up and I tend to do a lot of water because I'm like you. I really love the water. I really love the ocean. So I tend to bring a lot of ocean stuff, but the vampire squid is definitely on my list to do because I love them. And so isn't the anglerfish, which is what you have a picture of. And I love these creatures. I love this. So I've watched a documentary on the frilled shark, so I'm thrilled you brought in that. The goblin sharks also, I've seen a documentary about them. They were really excited. And the vampire squid, I have a video on hand about them too. And then obviously the angler fish. So you brought in a lot of marine life that I do know a little bit of background in, but you tied them in all together into one poem, which was really exciting. The long line rhymes were just brilliant. One of the things that I love about these marine life, when you go down to the depths below and there's no light, is that they adapted. And so you bring that. Some have a natural glow, blue, gold, purple, weave through reefs, because they glow in the dark. I mean, how wonderful is that? It's just so brilliant. I actually, you know, I have this, I have for one of my fear series poems, I have this little crab and he's afraid of the dark, so we won't go in. So he fights off every big creature in the ocean because he's really scared of the dark. So it's not because he's really brave, that he's fighting all these other bullies. It's just that he doesn't want to go inside his shell. But then he gets this little friend that has it's a little glowworm that's in the ocean, and they become friends. And it's, I don't know, it's a weird thing. But I love that idea that these creatures have adapted. So I love that you put that in that poem. And again, this how you bring in the facts, 50 jammed into its mouth. So you actually bring in how many teeth it's had. There's actual factual information. So it's cool how you kind of strung these all together. And, of course, right here, the can crush a man's take in mini submarine. I mean, these are really formidable foes. When you think about the pressure that's down below and that would crush us, and you think about all these animals and all these marine life that survived down there, like they're pretty formidable foes. And you talk about that. It's a pressurized cabin of 360-degree view. You've come upon the frightening sights of the dark ocean's night. Again, brilliant long-line rhymes there. I really am quite excited about this poem, as you probably could tell, because I really love ocean life. I know I love trees too, but I think I watch a lot more documentaries about oceans than I do about forests. I love forests, I love trees, but when it comes to documentaries, I tend to watch a lot of ocean ones. Like the Deep Blue was a really good series, and I did like Planet Earth, but there's just all these little videos that are just amazing, really well done. I love what you brought and how you brought it all together. And if anybody doesn't know, marine snow, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But marine snow, if you want to, I put the definition on the board if you want to read it or if you want me to read it. But I love that you brought that in too.
I put it in my author's notes, yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay. Do you want to read them?
Yeah.
Do you want to read your author? Do you want to read it?
Yeah. Oh, you go ahead. Get right there.
Yeah, the marine snow is a shower of organic material falling in upper waters to the deep ocean. In addition to the dead animals and plants, marine snow also includes fecal matter, sand, soot, and other inorganic dust. The decaying material is referred to as marine snow because it looks a little bit like white fluffy bits. And I love that you put it in there. You could tell that you're very knowledgeable about this subject, especially because you put this together rather quickly, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so I mean, that just shows the depth of the wealth of knowledge you already had to already pull from. I just think it's so cool. Thank you, Lady A.
Thank you very much. Wow.
I know. I told you, 18 minutes later, I will finish my... I get really excited. I just can't help it. Rack, what do you think?
I'm in the mood for some sushi right now. I really like this.
I love sushi.
Yeah, the oceans, it fascinates me. I love the creatures. To me, like you had mentioned earlier, it kind of reminds me of space on the Earth. It does cover 80% of the Earth, the water, and most of it's unexplored. So that there's a lot that we could still find. One of the other things that fascinates me isn't even the ocean or anything like that. It's some of the legends, like the Loch Ness monster. They've dredged it and went looking for Nessie and everything else, and there's no place for it to hide. But yet they come up with all these stories about how it could be still lurking about. It's one of those things that, it sounds like it could be possible. So, it's really crazy, some of the pictures that they have, and just, even though it's an enclosed body, because the lock, I think, is self-contained, so it doesn't empty into a larger body of water. So, that's a real tangent as to what you were talking about. The ocean itself... like you're talking about when you go swimming, and you find those warm patches. I like I don't know how many people or if people are aware even, they have underwater volcanoes that heat up the water sometimes. And you know, that's amazing to think about that. You know, it does get hot enough that you could actually bake someone or boil them rather. So you got to be careful about getting too close to them. But the natural vents and things in the ocean are just phenomenal. I mean, some of my favorite sci-fi fantasy is when they do go underwater and they build little cities and things to try and survive underwater, and try and be self-contained, because you know above the land is becoming so crazy and everything else. So you know the idea of a underwater city has always been something. You know, this, even though you don't mention anything like that, it still evokes the idea for me because of, you know, this is what my neighbors would be if it were true. So it's a wonderful thought, you know, the different life and how it adapts. I was not too long ago, I was talking about there's a type of animal that actually is able to reproduce without a mate. So it's almost like self-cloning, and the sharks are one of those animals. I think there's a recorded documentation of 4 female sharks that were in a tank without any access to any other sharks, and one of them gave birth to a live. Life birth, gave birth. Yeah. So, I mean, it's fascinating. It really is how the things that happen and it's not even limited to the ocean, but you know, the facts that you bring in are beautiful.
Thank you very much, you guys.
Excellent comment. I love the picture you put on the board. It just shows what wonderful adaption they have. You know, time flies by when I'm talking so much, guys. We have 9 minutes left, so I don't even know where the 2 hours went. I want to thank you, guys. I'm going to say my thank yous after, but we've got one more poem and 9 minutes left. I can't believe the 2 hours are already over. Thank you, Lady A, so much for bringing that. I was quite thrilled. If you couldn't tell by my enthusiasm. I'm going to go ahead, click on, I really do love those ocean creatures. They're my favorite. So I was thrilled you brought in so many. I'm going to press play for Phil. He wrote to the ocean as well, and he brought a little bit of a story. So we're going to play him, get some comments, say my thank yous, and try to end on time. So here we go.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called A Door Open to the Abyss. Deep beneath the ocean waves stands a door, covered in seaweed, slowly creaking open to reveal the darkness that can be felt, that can disintegrate tissue, crush bone until the marrow oozes out of the pores. Strange creatures related to Leviathan swim about. More strange than an alien invasion greet our eyes. Who are these creatures in armor-plated skin? They're from the dry land that you heard in fairy tales. Dark nightmares slither through the open door, where the spiritual merges with the decay of man. The haunting screams echoing in a darkened abyss, in a bleak watery world of deafening silence. There's an old wooden door with a rustic handle left open for the demons to enter with hideous delight. This is Pandora's box. Fallen angels, the Nephilim, twisting the minds of greedy men with delusion of power. Shut the door to the hidden thoughts that hiss. With a spittle of venom, the bite marks of Eden's apple replace the fall of man in epic fast-forward mode. We should have listened. We should have kept the door closed. End poem.
Excellent. Now, one of the things I put in the prompts was, what will you find at the bottom of the deepest, darkest places of the earth? Because it wasn't just the ocean. It was actually in down, if you watch the video, down in the depth of the crust of the earth as well. I love that he brought in a fictional piece about the Leviathan and bringing in, obviously, biblical terms, but also bringing in the fiction and fantasy of these, you know, a fairy tale heard in nightmares. This storyline that goes through what he's finding in the bottom deep below the Earth's surface, which is Pandora's box, which I think everybody knows the story of Pandora's box. And of course, you know, even though this piece reads like a fictional in some of its elements, there's an underlying truth about society and human beings in general about the pull and the pull, you know, the push and the pull of those darker elements that are part of nature, you know, and the idea of what curiosity can really lead to. I mean, we all want to learn, we all want to do things, but a lot of inventions, a lot of even science, you know, endeavors, they can be very harmful. And I like that idea that even though it is a fictional piece, there is definitely elements of truth that can be tangible towards society and mankind as a whole. This is a brilliant piece, Phil. I always love your work. I love your SoundClouds. I appreciate you taking the time. This was creative and I think very relevant in many of its truths and underlying message. Really, really well done. Rack, what do you think?
Yeah, he did an amazing job with this. You know, it's when you talk about the depths of the Earth, you know, my mind immediately goes to Journey to the Center of the Earth. I almost completely dismiss the trench, but you know, it's equally fascinating to me. But you know, some of the fiction for Journey to the Center of the Earth comes to mind as well. When just that thought evokes that expression evokes thoughts of that, and you know, you get this whole idea of fantasies like mole men and whatnot, and you know, and I guess if you were to find Pandora's box, it's probably where it wound up, you know. So it's a lovely thought, and beautiful storytelling, you know, well woven.
Thank you, Rack. Excellent comment. And Lady A?
I love Phil the Poet, and I thought this was a great story and with a great message in it. And, you know, the culmination of it was that last verse when he shut the door, the hidden thoughts that hiss with a spittle of venom, the bite marks of Eden's apple, replays the fall of man in epic fast-forward mode. We should have listened. We should have kept the door closed. I thought this was so powerful, this whole thing. I really loved it.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I agree. Phil is quite the poet. Phil is quite the poet. I do want to thank you, Phil, again, for bringing that. I love the SoundCloud. I really, really love the piece. I love the storytelling. I love stories in general, so it was right up my alley. I do want to thank, Brackentor, Kay, Stephen, Deb, Lady A, Phil the Poet, and I got everybody right, Rack. I did. Okay. Depend on Rack. I got everybody. I want to thank you all. I know there was like six poems and you know, it flew by so quick because I was having so much fun. I appreciate you guys all calling and writing, for taking the time to watch the prompts and learn a little bit. I put on my thing now because Sweet Pea has kind of made this little joke between, you know, her and I and everybody. So on my thing it says Sky Home Study Program Production, because she said she always feels like this to do homework. But I do appreciate you taking the time and thought into your pieces and bringing me smiles and happiness and poems and talent and conversation. And that's the end of show, folks.
Excellent job. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lady A. We got like a minute left, which is great. I was like, whoa, what happened there? I did already talk about the music at the beginning of the episode, so I'm going to play us out because I already put all the information right at the beginning. This is Ace of Base. I hope you guys enjoy. And thank you again, everybody.
Thank you.
Nice.